At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
You know you belong together, little big pod forever. You're talking on air. Nathan has weird hair. From the very first moment I heard you, I never felt such emotion. From talking on air, I said no, you are there. So hold me in your arms and let me go. I wanna stay forever, closer each day. Graham and Nathan.
This man is a hero. Thank you so much, Graham.
I actually did nothing.
Thank you for your services. Let me tell you something, what our boy Graham did.
All I wanted was a poo.
Mairead Ronan, off of Today FM, off of RTE fame, ended up getting locked in the disabled toilets. Our boy Graham heard her screams.
No, I didn't.
And tried to break down the door.
I really didn't.
Did you kick it in any way, or did you watch technician Byron throw his foot against the thick oak door?
No, I was just passing, and then Byron goes, oh, just the guy. And I go, what? And he goes, hold this.
You're like, I need to do a big old poo.
He's like, hold the handle down.
Yeah.
And he started kicking the door in. Oh, we're here already. See, this is, how easy is Zoom?
Can you hear me okay?
Oh, Deb, you look terrific in the blue jumper.
It's actually really cold. It's supposed to be like 25 degrees here and I'm freezing.
Oh, Deb, you've made a real effort.
Yeah, you're dressed up for us.
But I'm not going to be filmed, like, as in I'm not being put anywhere, am I?
Yeah, this is being put out right now. Thank you so much.
Yeah, we need more listeners, so we've decided that we're going to now do live videos on YouTube.
That's not true.
Nah,
that is not true.
Messing.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast, our good friend, Deb. Deb, say your name and what you believe in.
My name is Deborah Gagan, and I believe in...
God?
I don't know, it's a weird, all I can think about is the Lindt chocolate bunny I just ate before I came on.
Oh, are you eating an old Easter egg before the sacred day?
My mom sent me over. It's annoying I can't see you, Nathan.
You're not missing much.
My mom sent me...
Well, we can. We can put you up on your phone. I can send you a link and you can put just...
Oh, it's too much effort. It's
yeah.
too much effort.
You know what I look like. Go on.
My mom sent me a box yesterday full of Easter eggs and I've been annihilating the little Lindt bunnies since yesterday. It's like she sent me a box and it's like they're all Easter egg brands that I can get here. So she just posted me like Lindt, Ferrero Rocher. I can buy them all in the shop next door to where I live.
Here's a fun fact about Ferrero Rocher you might not know. The gooey chocolate inside is actual Nutella.
I know. It's made by the same company.
Graham didn't know that. Graham, there you go. That's a fun fact. You're always learning on the podcast. Now, Deborah, since we've last spoken, a lot of things have changed in your life.
They have. I am now hashtag girl boss.
Oh.
Hashtag lean in. Hashtag... what are all these things that I'm supposed to be, but actually I'm not. No, I set up a company, which sounds more impressive than it is. And I left my job during the pandemic. And yeah, I was just sick and tired of...
working for the man.
Sick environments and working for the man. So yeah, I wanted to get a new job and I didn't really know... I didn't want to jump into another agency again. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And then I sort of just like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to just do my own thing. And that's what I did. So I'm kind of started that in, when was it? I guess January, February. So still very much. But the kind of build up went on for a while. And that was kind of very anxiety inducing. But yeah, so doing that now. And
so for anyone that didn't know what you did before, what was it?
So I was working for an agency as an like a talent partnerships agent, looking after influencers and kind of brokering, licensing talent partnerships, that kind of thing. So I'm doing pretty much the same now, but doing it for myself, partnered with a former boss of mine. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. So it's, look, it's been, it's one of these weird things. Like I didn't really want to be like set up a business. I didn't see myself doing that. And I kind of just wanted to do it because I just like wanted an easier life and just flexibility. Yeah. So it's just kind of, it's a weird thing because you kind of find yourself looking at like comparing yourself to other people online in a sense of like, I, you know, everyone is now a hashtag. That's why I'm joking when I say a hashtag girl boss. Everybody is like, you know, an entrepreneur or doing something amazing. And it kind of makes you feel like, when you're doing it or if you want to do it, that it feels really scary and impossible. But actually, I mean, I'm essentially a freelancer. I just have a company because that's what my accountant told me to do. So yeah, look, it's been an interesting experience, but look, it's going well.
We're in a race, Deborah, but who are we racing against?
In our lives, right? That is the thing. It's this race. It's this constant doing something, like trying to race to get to some specific point, but you're kind of like, but this is fine now. So why don't I just enjoy this and go with this? Whereas you're constantly, it's like, I don't know about you, but like, well, no, you'd be different because you're not girls, where you're constantly like, when like Instagram first set up and you're kind of like comparing yourself physically to other people or comparing your lives to theirs in a sense of like, okay, I'm going, you know, they're on holiday somewhere nice and I'm not there or whatever, kind of very superficial things. Whereas now Instagram has been kind of like democratized for everybody. So you've got CEOs on Instagram that are promoting their businesses that are, you know, and they're not all CEOs of big crazy companies. They might be small businesses, but and it's great because people can share these successes and all of these things, but there's this pressure to kind of be like, okay, well, they're doing that and I'm not doing that. And then I'm not really a sharer on Instagram. And I'm like, suddenly like, oh my God, am I supposed to become, you know, a business type influencer, not an influencer, but almost there's now this equivalent to an influencer, which is the, you know, these kind of young, particularly women. I think it's like, I don't know, there just seems to be this culture now of like, you know, yes, sharing your successes, but it's, I don't know, it's creating, I feel like it's creating, you know, this impossible sort of bar for people to reach, which is actually probably what gave me the most anxiety about all of this when I first started. That I'm feeling like, okay, I'm not going to have any money and all of the other things that come with it. But
if you were to ask yourself, so you turned 30 this year, you're living in London with a gorgeous French man. You've started
waiting for you to drag him into it. I was like, how long will it take for the word French man to be slipped in there?
I think it should be known. He's a gorgeous man with olive skin and can grow a stunning beard. But your life at the moment, 30 years of age, living in London, French man, starting a new job. If you were to ask yourself when you were 20 that is what you'd be doing, do you think you'd be happy with it, or would you have expected maybe your life to have taken a different route?
Good question.
Thank you.
This is actually what's interesting when you, because you said about like this race and like, what are we racing for? So if you told me I was going to be in this situation if you told me at 20, I'd have been like, absolutely no way. That sounds like such a successful, happy person. But I am in that situation now, but I don't feel successful and I feel happy enough, but I don't feel like, you know, for what I've achieved, I think it's, you know, to a 20-year-old me, it would be actually like, well done, that's great. You're happy. You've got this great guy. You've got, you know, you're living in a nice flat in a nice part of London. Okay, you don't own a property yet, but you've got, you know, you're doing, from a career perspective, doing things that I would have never really thought I'd have had the confidence to do, because I would never have considered myself, you know, very business-minded or very commercial. And I guess that's something that I learned that I sort of am, but I lack a lot of the other things that, like, you know, I don't know, like the financial side of things. I mean, I'm just absolutely dense when it comes to like maths and numbers. And so things like that, I would have thought And again, these are things that you should learn in school, that it's like, okay, you can actually still work in business and be commercial and be horrific at maths. Whereas I thought, no, I'm a creative person. I can't do anything like that. So I went down this sort of creative route, but I wasn't good enough to be like creative. So I kind of feel like I've struck this balance between the both, where I'm kind of working in a creative industry and, you know, spotting, you know, creative people and creative talent, all the things that I can't do myself, but I can spot it in other people, and then monetizing that. So yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know. I mean, like for other people who are kind of looking at, you know, what they want to be in the future, it's just let it happen. I think, you know, if there's any sort of night doubt there, you kind of just have to kind of roll with it and take jobs as they come and they lead to other things. And, but yeah, no, to your point, you know, I wouldn't have really believed you if you told me that this is where I've ended up. And I would say, yeah, I feel like, well, that's great. You've done okay. But when you're in it, you feel like I'm not doing good enough. I'm not good enough. Everyone else is doing better than me.
But yeah.
And that's kind of, I guess, the frustrating thing.
You were talking about there about the pressure to put stuff up on social media and you want to be this girl boss because that's what you feel like you have to be. Is that even
I mean,
more...
I don't want to. I'm making fun of the girl boss.
Yeah, no, I know, but I know, but that's kind of what society kind of makes you feel like you have to do. But in terms of the fact that you are actually trying to make a living out of that industry, does that not further increase the need to do it? Just a question, because you haven't put up there, and I actually admire that, because I hate people who put everything all over social media and they're just trying to show how great they are and all that kind of stuff, and they only put up the good stuff. So I admire the fact that you've set up this business without any backing from social media at all. It's just done off all your own back. But in terms of, how did you come to the realization or to the conclusion that you weren't going to go that way?
Like, I guess I've always been just, I don't know, I've got this weird thing. Like, I'm not active on Instagram. I mean, I'm very active as a bystander. That's my job. But it wasn't really a decision. I think it's just that the industry has changed, that now suddenly, if you want to work in this industry, anything to do with marketing, social media, it's almost as though you've got to promote. It feels as though you have to promote yourself on Instagram and that you've got to have this presence, because the people that you're going to be working with and the brands you're working with, there's almost a sense of like, well, who's this person? She's only got this amount of followers. She's not active. And I don't actually believe that that's true, because I know that the people that I'm working with and the brands that I'm working with actually, you know, yes, if I sign an influencer, you know, most of the time they request to follow me on Instagram right away. So that I know that they go looking to see, right, who is this girl? And I do think there is an understanding that I am on private. So people will see that, okay, I've chosen this route, and I've seen it with other people, and it's not across the board. But I just do feel like there is this sense of like, in certain industries, you know, if it is fashion, marketing, you know, influencer marketing, whatever it is. I mean, you guys obviously know you're in media, so it's different. But I think there is sometimes feels like there's this pressure to kind of, yeah, like self-promotion and not in a way of like, oh, this is amazing, I've just set up a business and I've, you know, in not in a really braggy way. I don't think, because I think there's companies that are, you know, or people like me that are setting up businesses that are just actually just sharing, you know, for the sake of letting the industry know that I'm here, I meet clients. And it's like a business marketing tool. So not even, I think that's where the pressure lies, because I don't care about the, you know, hey guys, I've set up a business, I'm Anna Grace, I've done this, 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 and this, and everything's amazing. It's more just about that feeling like, okay, I do actually probably need to take that step into, you know, here I am, this is what I'm doing to create my own marketing, really, for what I'm doing. I've set up a business or a work Instagram. So it's kind of like, right, I can do it via that. I don't need to do it from my own private side. But again, it's just, yeah, it's just how the kind of world is changing in that sense. And it's just another added layer of, you know, pressure and self-comparison. It's like during the day, I'm like, oh God, looking at influencers going, she's so skinny, oh my God, I wish I looked like her, where is she on holiday, that's amazing. And then you're like, oh my God, look at this girl. And then you look at your peers, and then you're like on the other side of the spectrum, and it's like, oh God, they've just opened up an office, or they've got a warehouse, or they're doing this, or you know, it's that's It's got just everywhere.
Deb, people are looking at you, Deb.
They're looking at you, and people are listening to this thinking, Jesus Christ, I want to go to London.
I don't want, that's not the end goal. It's not about, I want people to look at me.
No, of course not.
It's more of a, just an observation of like coming into this sort of, you know, setting up a company and sort of have being faced with this new kind of, I guess, world and this new task of, you know, establishing myself in it as a,
You know, I have a question for you, Deb. Now, in your career, you've met many influencers and you've worked with them and you've spoken about how you can feel insecure being on their profiles, and everyone can relate to that. But through your work experience and from meeting these influencers, have you noticed that they themselves are insecure in any way? And has that surprised you?
Absolutely. And to be honest with you, I would say I feel less insecure than I now that I work in this industry and I know influencers and I'm, you know, I'm working with them all the time. I feel less insecure about myself now than I did prior to working in the industry. Not just because, oh, I know that they're insecure too. Everyone's insecure. And of course they are. And can you imagine? I mean, for us, we just get to sit here like I'm in a hoodie and I don't need to really think about it. Whereas they have to get up every day. And it's not even just about, oh, that girl looks better than me. It's like that girl's being way more active on social than me. She's doing so many, you know, so much different content. Her content is so creative. There's that actual like work pressure, seeing what they're like, that girl's working with that brand. I didn't get asked to work with that brand. They feel like shit because of that. There's so many different ways that they can feel insecure. But from a sort of a lay person, a non-influencer's perspective, I am very much more aware of what goes into creating that content and sort of, you know, how they create the content to make themselves look as good as they can. And, you know, and not in a, not to sort of, you know, shit on them like, oh, we're only seeing, you know, they look like crap behind the scenes. They don't. But you know full well, you see them sending through, you know, multiple versions of content and, you know, and they're having those awful days too, where they're like, oh God, I just don't like, everything looks crap on me. I don't want to shoot today. You know, they could have their period. They could be bloated. They could, you know, you realize actually they are very much normal people too, albeit usually blessed with, you know, better features and metabolisms, but you know, they go through the same stuff as all of us. And I know they get a bad rep, but you know, most of them are lovely girls and guys.
So Deb, your job is basically to sway people and woo them into your company so you can represent them. How do you get people into your company? What do you do to woo them? Why should I join your company, Deborah?
So for me, it's just about getting them on. I have to just get them on the call. I tell them about all of the, you know, very briefly in an email, what I've done before. I've worked with big celebrities. I've done big partnerships with Cristiano Ronaldo, Reese Bora, Jennifer Lopez.
There
you know, I drop the bombs, which is all true. I did work across all of those projects.
I'm not lying.
Which is all fabricated.
No, but like that's the initial hook to get people interested. And then I'll be like, right, get them on a call. But actually, you know, for me, it's less about the razzle dazzle, because there's millions of agencies out there, first of all, and everybody's offering the same thing, but offering it as though it's sort of, you know, theirs is unique, right? Everybody's got their USP. Everybody's got something that they think is about their agency that's better. And I think having worked in agencies and seeing, you know, how it works when you've got, say, a roster full of talent, like maybe fewer agents, you know, you don't necessarily get the time and attention that you might need. You know, my pitch is just that, look, we're a boutique service. We don't have, you know, we want to keep the roster tight and make sure that we're working for you. And also, I don't get paid unless you get paid. And that's my biggest thing.
I have to say that really worries me, because Graham and I were part of an agency. And I'll be honest with you, I had a screen test for something. Let's just say the sheriff over here was going to bring a wheelbarrow full of cash
to the agency.
I went for the screen test and I said to my agent, this is it. I know I've let you down on, I'm not going to say so many occasions, because I'll be honest with you, there hasn't been many, but I really said, this is it. I did the screen test. I'm really happy with it. I tell you, we're going to hit the jackpot.
Yeah, big time.
Got the email last Friday when I woke up from a nap. You didn't get it. And then I think, Jesus, is this agency going to drop us, Graham? Yourself and myself. At least you've got a voiceover ad.
Yeah, they might have made a tenner out of that.
You'll live to fight another day.
It doesn't cost them.
Oh, thank Christ. That's good to know. Sorry, I was getting insecure there.
That's part of the pitch anyway. And then also what we're offering is, I sound like this is an ad. I've just asked you guys, I'm like, hey guys, I've just set up a new business. Can we just do a podcast around my
plug away?
Reel in some talent. No, but one of the big things I do say is, you know, and it's something that, you know, working with my former boss on this partner together, and she's worked in the licensing industry for like 25 years. She's an absolute like industry veteran who, you know, knows everything and anything about building brands and licensing. And so I'd worked for her for years. And so creating big brands, brand development, creating product lines around the talent and their IP, that's a big focus for us. And really growing them and creating like long-term revenue strategies for them, as opposed to it all just being kind of in and out ads. So that's part of the offering. And that's not necessarily something I've seen from, you know, there are definitely agencies doing that, but it's across the board. It's, you know, it feels like that's a bit more of a USP that we have that maybe other agencies don't. So yeah, that's kind of my pitch.
And Deb,
would you sign up to me?
Ah, Jesus, we're in. You know we're in. We've actually spoken on previous episodes how you tried to get us involved in a certain product, and we had to send you over our Instagram stats.
Not great.
Just say that was depressing.
To be honest, I never heard back from the client. They came back to me for they got in touch with about one of the talent I look after, and so they approached me, and I was like, threw you guys in the mix. But they didn't come back to me on anyone. So
well,
I feel too bad.
We didn't make any money, and you didn't make any money. Losers!
I haven't given up on you.
No, please give
don't.
Up.
Don't.
No, you're wasting your time.
No, Graham.
Give up on us.
Graham,
please.
We're about to be dropped by our Irish agency. We need something.
If we can't make it in Ireland, we're not going to make it in fucking
Maybe
London.
We're more profitable in the UK. There's too many Irish people here.
I'll doctor your Instagram stats so that they say 100% London based.
If KFC ever come to you, please say I'll work with them, because I love the t-shirt they gave me with a big bucket of chicken on it.
I'll do anything. I literally will do anything.
If you get this in Urban...
I really do hope I'm not doing very many KFC campaigns, but yeah.
You'd be glad to have the Colonel on board.
I got in this business.
The sexy Colonel. So can you speak about your love life with sweet Francois? How has it been living with him? Because I know since we last spoke, you moved into a two-bed, so a bigger apartment.
Yeah, we're looking to move again. We made a mistake moving, basically. We just moved out of...
This what? Is an exclusive...
No, we didn't make a mistake. We chose a place based on, like, location. And the location's been great. It's been a godsend. But the flat's too dark, and the terrace gets sun for, honestly, about, like, an hour. It's so frustrating. So we're looking to move again. But look, you'll learn. It's not like we bought the place. But look, no, it's been fine. I think, you know, we kill each other. But I think what you learn is that when you're living together in a situation like this, where, you know, you only have each other and you are so easily irritated by, like, I'm flying off the handle, as is he, at the littlest things. But then you just learn to recover from it faster. So, and I think you don't let things dwell. So I think it's a real eye opener for if there are problems in your relationship that maybe where you could distract from them when, you know, with normal life, going to work, going out with weekend friends, whatever, it's very easy to sort of kind of keep going along with something like that. So it's in a positive way. You know, nothing like that has come to light. But yeah, we're killing each other. And, you know, we're fighting all the time. Like, we'd fight last night over dinner. And because I cook all the time. And I assume that responsibility. because I want to control what we eat. So we are healthier and slimmer come June 21st. But then there's evenings where I'm just like I think I've got like hay fever in like my bloody late 20s or and 30, I'm 30 now.
Oh, that could be COVID.
I just felt like I was coming down with something last night.
Could be something else. I don't know. I was reading on the news about this thing. I don't know. Will that be it?
What?
COVID? Yeah.
No, it's not COVID.
I don't know if it's hay
fever. No, because I had this happened to me recently as well, and I actually did get a test because there's a test centre nearby. I just walked in and got one and I was fine. So it's, I think it is because the weather was really nice. Anyway, boring. But yeah, so I can't believe I'm on your podcast talking about the weather. Oh, oh my God.
Why not, Deb?
It's a bit like my calls to my mom were the temperature in Ireland versus London. And she says, no, it was this here. I'm like, well, they're different countries, so that would make sense. I'd say I have become a bit codependent and we've been trying to break that cycle recently. He doesn't care. Like, he would just happily just sit there and play Nintendo Switch all day. And if I said, oh, I'm going out for Sunday for a big bike ride with my friends or whatever, he'd just be like, cool, see ya. And then if he did that to me, I would be like, what? You're leaving me alone at home on a Saturday on my own? Like, I'd lose it. So trying to balance that a bit.
I have a show and tell.
A what?
I've show and tell. I saw this on my Facebook, I think, maybe 2 or 3 months ago. And I was thinking about putting it into our WhatsApp group, but I realized that it would have started a massive conversation and I wasn't ready for it because it was late at night. And then I forgot about it until Nathan told me this week that Deborah was coming on. So I found it.
Oh, amazing.
Okay.
It's one of these Facebook memories.
I have found the original Facebook group that the three of us were a part of when we set up the Whisper and I podcast, where we used to talk about ideas.
So for anyone that doesn't know the Whispering Eye, Graham.
Well, I was trying to think, did we introduce Deb at the very beginning? Did we give a kind of a background to who Deb was? Or did we just go straight?
We've had Deb on before.
Just in case someone's a first-time listener.
She's our dear friend.
Deborah, we met in college 10 years ago now at this stage, and
you didn't even introduce who I was.
I was thinking that I was halfway through. I go, have we introduced who you are, or is this some random girl like talking about a business she set up in London,
plugging her company?
We're helping up new brands.
All your 8 listeners, including Mark, Sean, Andrew, will all know exactly who I am.
So, well, I read the very first message I put in. So we had a podcast called the Whisper and I podcast. The three of us set it up together. And this is me going to a person in our college course called Brian Keegan, who looked after audio, to pitch him the idea.
Jesus.
My grammar was fucking horrendous.
Was it?
I couldn't even imagine what my thesis was like at the time. So, first message in here. Right, meeting with Keego went well. Talk for about... okay, I'm going to read it as I typed it. Talk for about an hour.
Ugh.
And he likes the idea. No capital letters as well here. Basically, he said he would help us as much as we want, but a few things came up.
Oh my God. Like, you've claimed to be the creator of the podcast, Graham.
Yeah.
Like, of the actual podcast around the world.
Sorry, The Whispering Eye was created in 2012.
Come on.
2012.
Joe Rogan stole the idea.
One, we want radio studio. Thing is, we'll, W-E-E-L, have to ask this Pat fella who run radio this year if we can use it. Not him, as he and Pat don't see eye to eye all the time.
Oh, Jesus, the politics of two lecturers. I believe now they get on very well.
They get on well now. Number two.
Oh, my God.
Two, not full stop, two, comma. If we using the radio studio, the likes of Pat and Stella could get involved, Brian said, which will hamper us when playing music without the rights. He said there should be no problem playing music without rights, but he said the others could find problems with it.
Who was going to be listening to it that we would have had issues with music rights?
Well, looking back over the Whispering Eye podcast, I don't know why we included full songs. It should have just been us talking.
Yeah.
But instead, we had a catalogue of full songs. So people, I remember Tim from our course listened and he said, why the fuck do you have the songs? I just skip it because I want to hear you guys.
We didn't know the structure of podcasts. You know what it was? We were being so thorough. We were trying to create something really like streamlined. And like, I think we were trying to create a radio show, like what it would be in the morning. Whereas now podcasts are just people like us coming on and just having a chat on a Wednesday afternoon. And then that's it.
Here we go on. If we somehow aren't allowed into studio, Brian said he will hook us up in his place.
Oh man.
Go to Brian's house.
I don't know if that would happen now in 2021.
The recording studio, and we could do it from there, or there's another room beside TV gallery under the radar, which he reckons will be second best. Where so much effort. where he would help us get started, saying nothing to the other lecturers. So basically, we need to meet early next week with each other to finalise what we're actually going to do, and then we can ask this Pat fucker if he'll let us use radio. Simple.
I can't imagine myself and Deb being too excited from that message.
Listening and here's this.
So here's your messages. Nathan, good job. Then Deborah, good stuff. We're going to be stars. Deb, obviously I was looking for a job in House of Fraser at the time. I was going there. Deb, what's Berwyn and Berwyn like? Where I was trying to get a job. Remember in the suits department?
Yeah.
And then I think it could be suits. Young guys do work in suits though. And I was a young guy at the time. When you look back and how easy we did film and broadcasting in DIT, now TUD. But oh my
God. It was an actual joke.
We did nothing. My dad used to always refer to it as transition year. Because I'm paying for you 4 years to go to Dublin to do transition. To do transition year. I go, yeah, it's great. Sure, at the time where we had to set up a tripod in fucking second year in college, we were in our 20s and we had to, three lecturers standing around a tripod on the ground, set that up there and balance it. I mean, oh, it was so easy when you think about it.
I know. And then me with the camera, like I'm bloody Christopher Nolan trying to shoot a fucking horror film. And I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I'm being graded in it and I will never want to do this.
I found an angry message
Ridiculous.
From me. If you would like to reminisce about the time everything kept on crashing in the studio and I would get angry. Capital letters. Cuntish! Crashed again and can't access the file. Something's up. I'll get Pat on it tomorrow. So fucking sickened. Good job though. So I'm trying to keep the morale up.
That's good man management.
I'm mad at myself and I'm mad at the situation. But guys, you're doing a great job. You're two stars. I fucking love working with you guys. Keep up the good work. You just go to Rolling Donut and you get a coffee for yourselves while I stay here smashing the tables. Because we would record it and then
That was a real education for you.
Oh, the pitch.
In anxiety management, and also a real window into Nathan's future with you.
Christ.
Well, let me tell you, at least at that time, I used to get my anger out and I used to smash the tables and then it was released. Now we just bottle it up. Just don't say anything and then have a breakdown once a year.
Bottle up, go to bed at night, lie there wide awake.
Mm.
Do you mind, Deb, if I ask about the sleep therapy you were doing?
Yeah, go on.
So what fully was it? You couldn't sleep.
Oh God, sorry. Somebody's delivering something. Can we?
Oh yeah!
Invite them in. Let's chat to them.
This is great.
Well, this is a pandemic. Hello? Should probably be social distancing.
So some good songs.
Yeah, it's open, but...
The Heavy.
Oh yeah.
How you like me now?
Oh, that's a great song.
That was you. You were suggesting it. All of the Lights, Kanye West. Modest Mouse, Marching to the
Sea. Sorry guys, it wasn't too exciting. You just needed to be let in to the building.
The sleep therapy. Why did you get into that?
So like I've never done anything like that before, like therapy or just in general, but I the worst insomnia. I've always suffered with sleep. And it'll just come in like periods of time and it's always very kind of textbook stress, whatever. And it was all kind of the build up to, you know, leaving my old job, starting this business and all of that. And I'd say from like October to like, yeah, like right up to kind of Christmas time and then January, I just was like not sleeping. So I would get up, I'd go to bed at say, I would say probably, you know, normal time, like 10:30, 11 o'clock, between 10:30 and 11:30. I'd always be in bed before 11 though, because Francois falls asleep like the drop of a hat. So we'd go to bed normally. I'd get up, I'd lie there awake until probably like from maybe 10:30, 11 until midnight, 12:30, one. And then I'd get up and I'd go out to the sitting room and I'd just kind of do something like watch something, try to read or do something for like 30 minutes. because you need to, like, I was for ages, I would lie there nonstop and I would just not sleep at all till like 4 or 5 in the morning.
Oh my God.
And then I was talking to a doctor and she was like, you shouldn't lie for more than 45 minutes in bed. I was like, wow. I was like, I'd be lying there for 3-4 hours wide awake. So then I started getting up, going out, and then I'd go back again and then I'd probably take another hour. Anyway, I'd usually fall asleep on average each night between kind of 2 and 3 a.m. Yeah, it was vicious. And then of course, like, because I was working from home, and actually then I went on garden leave, so I wasn't even really working. And so I was just like falling into this trap of like, oh my God, I'm not sleeping, but I'm getting up late and I hate this. And, you know, it was just like, it wasn't good. And like I say, getting up late, I forced myself out of the bed by like 8:30, 9 o'clock, which is late if you're working. I wasn't working, but I was like, I'm going to be working soon and I need to break this cycle. And I just like the idea of being an early riser, even though I'm just not. I love in theory. Again, Instagram, I hate it. You wake up and you just like, I go on Instagram and it's like 8:30 in the morning and you've seen somebody with a story up from 2 hours ago with their coffee going, morning sunrise. And I'm like, oh, I want to be that person, but I'm not. I contacted this sleep. Well, she's not actually a sleep therapist. She's a psychotherapist who does hypnosis for like variety of issues, whether it's like just anxiety or, you know, lots of different things. But one of the things she really specialized in was like imposter syndrome, people who have like self-doubt, you know, all of these kinds of things that I know I'm sort of dealing with. And this whole idea of like perfectionism, which sounds like, you know, one of those trick questions where you go to an interview and be like, and what's your biggest, you know, what's your biggest flaw or your, you know, what's something about you that, you know, you find a challenge and you have, well, I'm a perfectionist. It's actually a really bad thing because being like, for me, being a perfectionist is almost like I'm so lazy because I won't even attempt to do certain things because I'm like, it's not going to turn out the way I want it. So I just won't bother. So it's not even this, like, I'm sitting there being really, really, you know, on it, trying to make everything perfect. It's this whole idea of just like, oh, just don't even bother. It's not going to be. So kind of battling with all those sorts of things. And yeah, I did a session with her and it was just a game changer. Like, I can't even explain. Like, I'm such a skeptic. I'm very cynical. I don't really believe in like a lot of things like that. You know, anything to do with, you know, I don't know, horoscopes, crystals, anything that sort of isn't really medical. I'm just like, I don't buy it. I'm not saying horoscopes are medical, but you know what I mean? Anything a bit wishy-washy. And yeah, then but she is a psychotherapist. So she talked me through a lot of things like about my past, childhood, the usual sort of textbook stuff, and to kind of get to a point where they're like, right, what is the issue here? What are you actually experiencing? Or why are you experiencing this insomnia? It's coming from somewhere. It isn't just, yes, there's stress because of this acute stress you're in of setting up a company, blah, blah, blah. But it's all ultimately rooted from, you know, some place of doubt that's been in, you know, put in your mind from childhood or whatever it is. So we went through all of that and then she does the hypnosis and it's kind of like, I think it was like a 2-hour session and the hypnosis was like literally like 20 minutes. And she kind of uses all of the stuff that she's talked to you about previously to kind of get you in this relaxed state, talking to you, reinforcing all of these new beliefs of like, you know, you are capable, you are this, you're that. And then you get the recording afterwards and then she kind of checks in with you over 4 weeks. So you kind of come back, you listen to the recording every night for like 21 days or something. But genuinely from, I don't know whether it was just this sort of switch in my mind that was the placebo effect of you've taken a step to rectify this, but I just slept that night. And I mean, when I tell you I hadn't slept before 2 a.m. in 3 months, like I had not slept before, unless it was like I was drunk and hungover, or, you know, I went to bed after a load of drink, which I'm not doing, because I'm not going out, you know, after on big nights out, I wouldn't have slept. And that was it. And ever since then, you know, I have nights where I kind of like Sunday nights where I'll feel like, oh, I'm not going to sleep tonight. But I think it's just, it became so much more about the anxiety of actually like, I'm not going to sleep. But I think because I've done something about it now and I have, feel like I have this tool, even like this Sunday, I was like, oh, I just had a feeling like I wasn't going to sleep. But I did eventually. And yeah, not right away. And I had a bit of a bad sleep. But it's not this lying awake till, you know, 3 or 4 in the morning anymore. So yeah, look, it was a massive game changer for me. And, you know, I was at the point where I was taking some kind of prescription stuff because of just out of desperation, because I just needed it sometimes when it was like I was just so exhausted. And that just stopped working. And I didn't want to get hooked on that stuff either. It's not a solution, you know. So yeah, it was a real game changer for me. I can't recommend it enough. Nice Irish lady based in London.
You got the tapes of the recording. And then do you... did you say you listen back to it then?
Yeah, so you initially do it for like 21 days. And that whole period is like a 4-week kind of course with her, where she checks in with you once a week and sort of gives you kind of talks you through certain things. We actually did another session as well in there, where like another hypnosis session. And it's all just about unblocking things. And I don't know, it's hard to like, again, she would be saying these things to me and I'm just like, or whatever, it's not really. I just kind of tried to go in with an open mind. And I just let it, you know, in my mind, I tried to not overthink it, because I think when you're overthinking it, then that's, you know, I just tried to accept it for what it was. And anything that's happening subconsciously is just happening. And, you know, you just sort of have to, well, you have to hope and assume that it is. And ultimately it did. I started to feel just even better in my days, where it was coming to like being proactive and, you know, working in this line of work. It is very much about generating business. You know, there's nobody kind of knocking on your door. You've got to go out, you've got to sign talent, you've got to pitch the talent. And I found it during lockdown, it was just so challenging to be motivated to actually get up every day and do that. And it still is now. But I'm just trying to kind of not, it's, I guess it's also about like the messaging in there. It's trying like, don't beat yourself up over things, just be a bit kinder to yourself. And I think everybody needs to be kind of told that these days, accepting that, yeah, okay, I got up late today, I wasn't productive, but you know what, I'll make a to-do list and tomorrow will be a better day, and not letting it. Whereas I, and I'm not saying I'm cured now. I don't have any of these negative thoughts. I do, where I get up and I have a crap Monday or a Tuesday and I feel like writing off the whole week because of that day. Whereas, you know, I'm trying to kind of compartmentalize a bit more since doing that. But now I listen to it only when I feel like I need to. So like this week, for example, I wasn't really sleeping great. And I kind of thought, I'll listen to it. And then I actually was fine and I didn't need to listen to it. But again, it isn't, you can like, she did this more for me because she thought this is not just about sleep for you. This is something bigger. But if you were suffering from just like pure sleep issues, where, you know, it might not be something much bigger than that. It could just be, you know, you have, I don't know, whether your hormone levels are at a certain point where you just struggle, because that can be the case. This, she can do like proper, like tailored recordings for you just for sleep.
And did you find it difficult, Deb, turning 30 in lockdown?
Yeah, it was pretty bleak. January 22nd birthday in lockdown was not very fun. I know, it was fine. Like my boyfriend made an effort, Francois made an effort, and you know, you do what you can. It was, I think, I find birthdays in general, I just kind of hate them. I feel like there's so much pressure. And actually it was weird. I think I almost was sort of not relieved, because I would have liked to have done something. But sometimes the pressure of like having to come up with something and, you know, inviting people and all of the kind of, you know, the anticipation of those sorts of things kind of stressed me out a bit. So it kind of was nice to just accept my fate and go, right, this is it. There's nothing you can do. You're staying at home and that's kind of that. But I think it was more not just the physical turning 30 and birthday, but actually then the dust settles and you're like, God, I'm 30 now. You know, there's so many. And even before turning 30, because obviously setting up the company, that was in October when I set it up. And then sort of February when we kind of, I kicked off trading, I guess. These kinds of decisions, when making them when you're about to turn 30, when you're, you know, you're in a relationship. And I know I'm very fortunate to have, you know, a boyfriend that I love and, you know, I'm in a very stable relationship and all of that. But you're kind of like, everything is just feels like it's a very different and harder decision to make, because you're kind of like, right, so I'm going to do this now. I'm probably going to have a baby in 1 to 2 years because I have to, even though I don't necessarily want to. I'd like to wait 5 years if I could. But, you know, you've got all these kinds of like decisions to make, and you're like, I'm not going to get maternity leave, so I'm going to have to continue working. So I need to save, and then I'll probably take 3 months off. And like, you just, it's quite an insane thing, I guess, when you're like, because turning 30 is fine. If you're like, it's not like it was this like traumatic thing, like, oh, I'm 30 now. It's just, there are certain factors that come into play where it just feels like, yeah, it's like if I was setting up the company, you know, it kind of had to be now or never. That's the way I felt. Because if I was any older, well, then maybe I'd have a kid and I probably wouldn't have done it, because it just would have been, you know, I wouldn't have the time or the energy to kind of focus on it. And maybe my priorities, well, of course, my priorities would be different. So it was kind of just felt like I was on this sort of clock of like, right, you've got to set the company up now. You've got to smash out 2 years, see how it goes, save up some money, because then when you have to have a baby at this age, you're going to have money put away for maternity because you're not going to be able to take maternity pay. And, you know, all these things that men don't have to deal with. But it's funny, I'm reading this book called Pregnant Then Screwed, which is written by this she's an activist, and she set up a charity called Pregnant Then Screwed, which is basically all about sort of like dealing with all of the discrimination and issues faced by women who have children in the UK specifically. But I imagine it would all, the stats would apply across, you know, Europe and Ireland, I'd imagine very similar. But like things like how, when you have a baby, you're, you know, we all know women are in, you know, there's a gender pay gap, but when you have a baby, you earn, like, as a mother, you earn less. So as a woman, I earn more than, say, a mother. You know, as a non, like, as just a female who doesn't have children, I earn less than men, but I earn more than mothers. So as soon as you have a child, your salary decreases for so many reasons. Mainly they just see, well, she's not, her priorities aren't straight. She's, you know, this, there are all these different reasons. And then men, when they have children, they earn more because they're seen as more dependable. So I'm like reading this book as well, because I just felt like, well, I'm not having a baby in the next year, but it's just about looking at what does the state of, you know, the, I guess, the working world look like for when that does happen, and all the kind of little things that you just don't think about. Whereas now it's like, I'm thinking about it all the time.
Was that a factor, setting up your own business, and the fact that you would take the payment out of it because you would be your own boss then and you wouldn't be relying on somebody else? I have to fight for wages. You'd be essentially paying yourself based on the work you'd be bringing in.
I think setting it up, actually thinking about setting up a business and having children, it was actually more of a deterrent for me. I thought, I shouldn't do this because I don't have the security net of, you know, I just get to go on maternity leave. And obviously different companies' packages vary, and the industry I'm in, it probably would have been crap anyway. But this gives me, doing this, honestly, as I said before, like, this was never on the cards for me. And again, this was a lot of stuff I talked about to the therapist, about, like, the sleep therapist, was I was never somebody that was like, yes, I'm ambitious, as much as, you know, anyone, you guys or anyone that went to kind of college who, you know, wants to get a decent job. But, you know, I don't want to be a slave to my job. I like, you know, I live for the weekends. I want to travel. I want to, you know, to do all these things. But then I think as a woman, you're also hit with this sort of thing of like, I need to do this because, you know, I'm a feminist and I want to, you know, I don't want to slip into a role of just, you know, being with somebody who, you know, my boyfriend does earn more money than me, and maybe we have kids in 2 years, and then I'll slip into a role where I kind of take a back seat in my job, and that's fine. And I think that, you know, it's just about striking that balance where, you know, don't kill yourself for having those, just for the sake of saying, because I'm feminist, I need to do this. You know, there is that playing in my mind, but then there's also, I want to have something. I want to be self-made, and I want to, you know, have my own money and independence and all of these things. But I think setting up the business was actually just coming from a place of, I just don't want to deal with any more bullshit. And I want to make, and I can see how much money that I can make. I can make it with, you know, I'm having to kill myself, you know? So it's kind of like, you know, I don't want to take over the world. I don't want to have a big, crazy, you know, massive agency where I've got to work long hours all the time. I just want an easy life with, you know, to enjoy my job and, you know, work hard, but not at the expense of my happiness. And I think a lot of people have realized that through this whole experience with COVID and everything. You know, I read an article in Elle UK this month where talking about, it was like dream small was the kind of title of the article. And it was kind of about people reevaluating supposed, you know, and again, it comes back to comparison of like, okay, I'm going to go to London and work like this girl. You know, she worked in events. She plastered it all over social media. She was going to all these big, you know, cool parties and meeting, you know, celebrities and whatever. And on the surface, her life looked amazing to all those people who stayed at home, who didn't really do anything interesting with their lives. And, you know, she admitted she would look at those people and kind of think, you know, God, they just stayed there. But then she slowly kind of came to realize, actually, those people are probably very happy. And she sort of decided herself that this isn't worth it. She's miserable. You know, she was crying in the toilets half the time at these parties, stressed because she had so much work to do and all the keeping up appearances, that she actually just decided to become a teacher and move back to Cornwall and leave London. And so, you know, I'm not quite there, but I think looking at, you know, working for agencies and the pressure that comes with that, I think you can strike the balance. And, you know, I'm still in that world, but I'm doing it now on my own terms. And again, working with like talents and brands that I want to work with, as opposed to just having to be kind of, you know, do what they tell me to do. It was all about flexibility, going home to Ireland as much as I want to work there and spend time with my family. If I want to, I can do that for 5 days rather than having to take holidays, constantly counting holiday days to, and I know that's what everyone has to do, but I think companies are now being a lot more flexible, hopefully. But from my side, I was just like, you know what, if I do this for 2 years and it doesn't work out, well, I've done it. And it's 2 years of my life that I've learned something. It was, you know, a happier 2 years, hopefully. And
no, damn right.
You can do.
I think, look, Graham and I, we think you're just great. And I know that anyone listening to this will be inspired, because it's very brave to do something like that, especially in a pandemic. And there's no doubt that women have a lot more pressure, because I think I even know with my girlfriend, you know, she's just started a new job, but there's also a pressure of, oh God, I hope I survive probation, because I do want to have kids at some point in the next few years, because, you know, you do have that body clock. But I think you're not going to regret your decision, because I think you are excellent at what you do and you're your own worst critic.
Well, I think we all are. Those are very nice words and nice sentiment. But I think we're all our own worst critics. I mean, that's, you know, that goes without saying, and it's the same for everybody. And I think the more people are honest about how they're actually feeling in situations, like, as I said, there's nothing worse. And I know that, like, there's a lot of, and maybe it's a very Irish thing, because I come up with a lot of people over here that are doing great things, and they're like, yeah, I'm doing this, it's going amazingly well. And I can't bear to even talk about it as I'm on a podcast talking about it. But to kind of, I would really downplay, you know, like when people ask me how things are going, you know, like, or I'll go to see Francois's friends and, you know, they'll be like, yeah, you know, we heard it's going amazingly. And I'm like, oh, it's going fine. It's not going amazing. It's like this fear of like, don't tell people it's going really well. And it's like, but it is going well. I'm like, but it's not going that well. And it's like, how do you measure you know, it's all about how you measure success. And I think that, you know, that's different for everybody. So if you, it's not about coming on and being all like, you know, to inspire people. It's just about saying like, actually, just what does success look like for you? Measure that and then take those small steps to kind of do what you want to do. Don't look at like, oh, that company, I could never do that, because that's what I've done this whole time. Now I'm starting to just go, okay, success looks like having this amount of salary so I can do, save this much this year and be happy and whatever, instead of going, if I have to set up a business, it's got to be, you know, a Fortune 500 company. It's not going to be. Like, we all have different, you know, measures of our success, and it's fine for yours to be, you know, a fraction of somebody else's, basically. I didn't know the podcast was going to go in this direction.
Deborah Gagan.
I absolutely love it.
Dropping knowledge bombs. Deborah, we've reached over an hour, meaning one of our longest ever guests.
We want some editing to do.
Thank you so much for joining us today. As Nathan, I second what Nathan said. We don't need to build you up too much here on the podcast, Deborah. I'm only messing.
You'll break me down after this.
I do want to say I love the way I complimented Deb, thinking that I might get a response back of a compliment, but...
Not to be. We're not making her any money over in London. No money. We don't get paid. She don't get paid. Deborah, thank you for joining us.
Oh, wait, Deb. One more thing. Sorry. Before you go, do you want to plug your business? Any listeners to follow your Instagram page or anything?
Yeah, I guess. BXS Talent.
Say it again before I interrupted you.
I have 51.
Yeah.
You know what it is? It's because I'm not actively posting on it. Yes, I'm still waiting for... I'm waiting for the right time till I have enough stuff to actually start filtering out. So, but yeah, please do follow it, but you won't get any content for another few months.
So what is it, Deb? One more time.
BXS_talent.
Got it.
Well, please follow that for our
brand
dear friend, Deb.
Is it Brand X Society or Brand By Society?
Well, it's Brand Society.
Right.
My partner's company now. We've partnered together for this talent division.
Beautiful. Deborah Gagan, thank you so much. A pleasure, as always.
We love you.
Bye. Thanks, guys.
Cut my life into pieces. This is my last resort. Suffocation.